Hello, and welcome to our podcast, Unified Communications, A Practical Approach. I'm Kate Dostart, and it's great to have you with us. In this podcast, we're going to engage in some fact or fiction, focusing on the pros and cons of unified communications. Joining me today to divide the myths from the mantras is Gary Auden, known expert and speaker on all things VoIP and UC. Thanks for being here today, Gary.
Thanks, Kate, and I think this is going to be a useful podcast because the practical approach is very important, as it is with any new technology.
Okay, let me tell the listeners how this works. I'll read a statement, and then Gary will tell me if that statement is fact or fiction, and then explain why. So let's get started with the first one. Gary, fact or fiction? Unified communications will change the compliance issues faced by enterprises.
Well, this one, I can't quite say it's a fact yet, but it's certainly not a fiction. When you think about unified communications and the multiple forms of communications to be used, voice is only one component. You know, there's various forms of text and video and conferencing and the like. I think what's going to happen is that the rules for e-discovery, Sarbanes-Oxley, HIPAA, are going to encompass all of forms of communications. Right? And as we try and relate these multiple forms together, someone doing a search for e-discovery says, I found this voicemail. I wonder if there's an email or instant message that relates to this as well. So I think it's going to be more complex. And I think the industry, the IT industry, is having enough trouble with just compliance issues in the way they work today. I think they're only going to get more complex, and especially since it's going to be multiple systems tied together. And the total storage is probably going to increase significantly, so there's going to be costs in storage as well as other kinds of costs.
Okay, here's the next one. Fact or fiction, a single vendor is possible for all of unified communications.
That's definitely a fact. But when we look at the vendors out there, there's actually three kinds of vendors. One vendor is a single vendor with one product with multiple pieces that provide nearly all or possibly all of the unified communications functions. Now, one of the issues there is, does every vendor define unified communications the same? And I know one vendor that has almost all the pieces except instant messaging, while other vendors include instant messaging. The second kind of vendor acts more like an umbrella. And this vendor can pull together multiple products under this one umbrella and integrate them into a single unified communications structure. What this really means is a multi-vendor environment where possibly an integrator or a prime contractor puts it all together for the customer. The third approach, which most people don't know too much about, is a company that produces middleware. That is, software to tie all this together. They do not provide most of the unified communications functions, but they provide software to tie everything together. So when we look at your question there, yes, it is a fact a single vendor can provide all of this. But a single vendor is only one of the three types of vendors that are going to be out there. So we need to be cautious and ask the vendor how many of these pieces are their own invention, how many are acquired from other companies, or do I, the customer, have to buy pieces and put them together myself? So the answer is yes, that's a fact.
All right. Statement number three, fact or fiction. Unified communications has been a positive experience so far.
Well, if you read the press releases, Kate, the answer is yes. All right. But I always wonder about press releases because who would do a press release saying something has failed? So when someone says this has been a positive experience, it's a little hard to determine how positive it is, because most of unified communications is there to make the human more productive. As where in the past we looked at saving dollars by paying less to various outsourced vendors or reducing direct costs and the like, this is not quite true this time. So yes, it's been positive, but it's a little hard to tell even with the press releases what was used of the unified communications suite that made the positive experience, and what did they compare it to? It may be that it's slightly unfair. I know one company extolled the virtues of saving 15 minutes a day for voicemail, and adding that all up, saying, if you have so many customers and you go over a year, look at all the hours you could save and how many dollars that is. My question usually is okay, I said 15 minutes, did that go back into my productivity, or did I do something else that was for my benefit but not necessarily the company's benefit for 15 minutes? So the answer is yes, and we'll hear more of those yes answers. But we always have to be cautious and ask, well, what was included, what was not included?
Great. Fact or fiction? traffic growth of unified communications will hog bandwidth in the enterprise networks and ISP access for teleworkers.
I think that's going to be a fact. As we look at unified communications, we realize that conferencing is going to be a major part of this. We're going to be doing web conferencing, video conferencing, voice conferencing. And if you look at conferencing, it's a relatively constant stream of information. When we look at the person working at home as a teleworker, especially that person who's using their consumer service, not a business service to the home, there are limits as to what the ISP will allow you to do. And these limits aren't officially known, but I've heard one sort of anecdote that one vendor measures how many gigabytes per month you actually transfer. And once you exceed that, they flag you as a bandwidth hog. Now, that becomes a real issue in the sense that unified communications is going to increase the amount of traffic the teleworker gets at home. And that conferencing may run hours a day. I know when I do email, a lot of my time is spent reading the email, and I'm not communicating over the internet. I'm connected, but I'm not consuming bandwidth. Now, here's some incidents that have already occurred. Comcast has canceled internet users in Maryland, Massachusetts, and Utah for being bandwidth hogs. They told them they were bandwidth hogs and should reduce their usage. However, Comcast has no published numbers to tell a customer what's a bandwidth hog. I'm an AT&T ISP user, and my recent agreement, accepted use policy, says they can cancel me for being a bandwidth hog, but they don't tell me what that is. So, and in Canada, I found that one person up there who was running a not-for-profit association wanted to send out emails to 1,500 members, and it happened to be a teleworkers association, was blocked after 25 emails, and he was noted as a spammer, when in fact he was not. So when we go to this question here, fact, I think it's a fact, but it's not a fact that's aware to many people out there. And as we push teleworking more and more, we're not telecommuting, but people working permanently at home, this issue of bandwidth hogging and ISP access is going to be greater. Now, as they looked at the AT&T agreement, that agreement covered whether I was a consumer or business user of their ISP services. So even if you have a business user, which is a much higher fee, you still could be a bandwidth hog. And it appears to me that one of the ways that the teleworker will get around this problem is have to change their subscriptions from consumer service to business service, which will increase the cost to the corporation for the teleworker's internet access. And one of the other issues that came up is that one of the carriers in Canada, one of the ISPs, was trying to do what's called traffic shaping to try and manage the traffic better. It degraded the quality of voice over IP. And if you look at unified communications, voice is an integral part of that. So what happens when my voice quality goes down? I can't use that ISP service. So this is as much a warning as anything else, but it's not an awareness that most people have, but I think it'll be a problem cropping up very soon.
Okay, something that we'll all have to be on the lookout for. Gary, what advice have some early adopters offered to new users concerning UC?
This becomes a question of phasing in UC. Early adopters say, don't try and do it all at one time. One of the first things that I've learned from early adopters is they said, once you've gotten, and this is an important point, once you've gotten voice over IP to work, then you move into the unified communications world. But to get voice over IP to work, you have to have a good data network to begin with. So getting the data network prepared, then having a successful VoIP implementation are prerequisites. Now, once you've accomplished that, the next suggestion is to move into unified messaging and presence. Not all the conferencing facilities, but handling voice and fax and email and instant messaging and presence as the next group of features. Then once you've got those features successful, adding various forms of conferencing to the mix, such as web conferencing and data conferencing and finally video conferencing. That's one approach. The second approach, they also said, is don't try and get all the business units in your organization to adopt it at the same time. Work with one business unit where there'll be clearly benefits to going to unified communications. get that one business unit to work successfully and determine the value of that. Then that business unit can help you sell UC to other business units as well. And understand, not every business unit will have equal productivity increases for Unified Communications. For those business units that have a lot of mobile users, Unified Communications could be more valuable. Those who are desktop bound and don't work with teams outside their offices will probably see less value in Unified Communications. So here, the value is getting the most bang for the buck with the earliest implementation. But one of the other points it made is that Unified Communications is a lot of features. And unless you have adequately trained users, you're not going to see the benefit. And one of the problems with Unified Communications with all these features is, which ones do I remember most? So the enterprise has to think about, how do they train the individuals, how do they remind the individuals of all these capabilities, and how do they make it easy to learn new things? Going to a website or reading a manual or attending class are good, but once you leave that, what if I want to know how to set up a web conference and I've never done it before? I don't want to go to a website. I don't want to read a manual. Can you click a point on the screen? And that's one of the most important parts of Unified Communications, is making the screen an extremely easy, intuitive screen to use to pull up these features. So when you look at the migration here, it's not all or nothing. It's piece by piece, and it's business unit by business unit. I guess the word that I could say here is caution, because you can also make a lot of mistakes here, Kate.
Gary, that was a very enlightening discussion on Unified Communications. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks. And what I want to make is a point here that Unified Communications is maturing, but not mature. And the success of Unified Communications deployment depends not only on the technology and the vendors, but also on the organization that puts it in, and especially the user training. If this is going to be for people productivity, you have to make the people a big part of the mix. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you also to our listeners today. I'm Kate Dostart, and remember, UC can unite your workforce.